The saves executed the order and adjusted Reiko's display to match the warship's changing positions. Reiko waited for a half hour before she said, "Now the forward pairs. Angle them outward at 10 degrees, and the saves complied. Reiko was working at appearing calm. Success would depend on how well she had designed the strategy. "Move," she thought, trying to will the sphere to abandon its position next to the rocky planet. The inward 4 tridents had covered more than 20% of the distance to the sphere when the Nual ship left the planet's orbit. It appeared to move slowly outward, but its acceleration soon became evident. "Angle the outward tridents to remain on intersection vectors with the sphere. Keep the inward tridents at 5 degrees behind it," Reiko ordered. "What's Reiko doing?" Renee asked Tatia privately. "To direct the sphere, Reiko has to continue to deny the ship inward opportunities, in addition to escape above and below the ecliptic. That's why she's not aiming the inward tridents directly at the sphere," Tatia replied. The early tension gave way to wariness, and that slowly gave way to routine operations. It would be a long chase. Aboard the fighters, the pilots enjoyed a small meal, communicated within the group, and whiled away the time. Franz kept in touch with Ellie, who was annoyed about her assignment. Her ship, the Redemption, was above the ecliptic and paired in the inward position with Alphonse's ship, the Arthur McMorris. "At least my partner in this operation is the sane one of the new Terran captains," Ellie complained to Franz. "I thought Captain Philister was the affable sort," Franz sent in reply. "He is, but he's likely to cave to Tripping's orders, even if they contradict Reiko's," Ellie replied.
"So how did you draw this assignment, Ellie?"
"I met with Tatia and Reiko to ask that very same question, Franz. Reiko said she didn't trust Admiral Tripping. They wanted me in this part of the formation because of all the OS captains, I was the most experienced fighter pilot. Tatia said that it might be my skill that prevents the sphere from slipping upward past the 3 NT warships.
Why not split the new Terran forces between the 2 Trident groups?" Franz asked.
"Tatia told me that Admiral Tripping demanded his forces remain together."
"What did you say to that argument?"
"I had my orders, Franz. What could I say? But I left those 2 with a final thought."
"Which was?"
"I wished them luck."
"What for?"
"I told them if anything happened to me because of this babysitting assignment with the new Terrans, then they would have to deal with Etienne."
Ellie listened to Franz's deep, heavy worlder laughter, and it made her smile. Aboard every trident and fighter, the leaders, officers, and crews bided their time, ensuring that they were rested when the final conflict came. The Omnians depended on the rotating bridge crews and SAIDs for any warning. The new Terrans attempted some semblance of normalcy, but nerves were wound too tightly to ensure that food digested well or sleep was uninterrupted. The singular exception to these efforts was Admiral Tripping. He sat in the Jeffrey Orlan's bridge command chair, focused on the holovid display, and watched the distance to the sphere close. All the while, he wished for the sphere to make an about-face and make a run inward or toward his forces. And while he waited, he fingered his controller device. Crew brought Tripping meals and hot calf, and after a time, the Admiral dozed for a half hour at a time while the bridge crew kept watch. Franz had checked his controller's feed nearly hourly, which mirrored the Liberator's telemetry data, as did most every other fighter pilot, until he realized his foolishness. After that, he chatted on and off with Ellie to keep up her spirits. He desperately wanted to talk with Reiko, but he chose not to take her focus away from the upcoming fight. Days later, Franz was asleep when Miranda pinged him.
"Nap time is over, dear," she sent. He discovered that Miranda had communicated to the entire fighter group.
The pilots were hustling to take care of last-minute business. Then they hurried to their seats and donned their helmets. Franz had divided his forces into four wings. They would swing out around the planet like a four-fingered claw, denying the sphere an exit along all vectors around the huge body. Unlike Ellie's situation, the new Terran fighters were spread among the four wings. A quick check by Franz of his controller's relay from the Liberator confirmed that the sphere was heading slightly spinward of the planet, where the fighter group hid. Franz surmised the Nual were probably expecting to use the planet to accelerate out of the system. The sphere had yet to release its bullet ship. Then again, Franz thought, you don't see any reason to yet. Group leader to all pilots, Franz sent. Once we sling around this planet, things will happen quickly. Your controllers have been programmed with the scenarios which I will execute. If this becomes a fight with the bullet ship, let the controllers do the work. They have the speed to intercept, fire, and evade. You don't. Franz had trained his pilots thoroughly in this concept, but there were a good many Omnians and every new Terran who had yet to be in a battle. Most of the experienced fighter pilots were either at Harrigan or captaining a warship. "Commanders, form up your wings," Franz sent. 32 fighters, who had clustered tightly together to present a minimum silhouette behind the planet, divided into four wings of 8. Franz had assigned a commander to his wing so he could concentrate on the fight if it came to that. Alex stood at the back of the Liberator's bridge, leaning against the bulkhead. René stood beside him, and they were flanked by Etienne and Alain. The four of them felt as ancillary as wheels on a starship, but there was no other place that they preferred to be. A thought niggled at Alex's mind, and he sought to grasp it. It had something to do with his conversation with Julian that took place in this exact spot. It occurred to him that he might have only formed the thought, but never expressed it. He replayed the exchange, which he'd saved. One of Julian's comments prompted him to wonder about the suspected age of the Nual civilization. "How do you maintain a society for eons?" Alex asked himself. "It must require unswerving devotion to the society, and no sacrifice would be too great," he thought. Alex received Miranda's heads-up that the fighter squadron was in play, and he glanced at the holovid display. Rieko had placed the flagship in the forward pair of tridents, which bored in on the sphere from below the ecliptic. Alex noted, as did the other senior officers, that the sphere chose to dive below the system on the last encounter, and he approved of Rieko's decision. Their ship would share the fate of the fleet if the sphere proved to be a more dangerous adversary than anyone surmised. Z's calculations of the sphere's acceleration and the distance to the waiting fighters ran in a constant routine, updating at every tick of time. When the optimal moment arrived, Z signaled the controllers of the fighter group, and 32 ships accelerated on curved trajectories around the planet. Rieko saw the fighters emerge from around the planet and accelerate toward the sphere. "Fight hard and come back safe to me, dear heart," she thought, sending her love to Franz. Franz's implant was filled with SAID communications. Embedded in his group leader application, which was developed by Z, were the attack scenarios. A list with an attached visual display enabled Franz to coordinate the group or the individual wings with a thought. However, once the battle was engaged, it would be up to every pilot to play his or her role. As opposed to Z's application, Miranda's messages were real-time. She kept him informed as the general strategy unfolded. This allowed Franz to focus on the upcoming confrontation, but be able to understand his part in the evolving conflict. Z had selected the first maneuver in Franz's implant, which launched the fighters on their journey around the planet. To maximize the appearance of a blocking force, the maneuver spread the fighters out and limited their approach velocity. The idea was to give the Nual time to observe the fighters and realize their dilemma. No one knew what the Nual would choose to do, but the fighters were following Alex's request. "The sphere is rapidly decelerating, Franz," Miranda warned. There were a few moments of delay before Miranda added, "Its halves are rotating. A bay is opening. You have your adversary, Franz. Good fortune." Franz's telemetry showed the sphere curving away from his two wings. He initiated one of Z's scenarios to direct the other two wings, which had circled the planet from the other side, to chase the sphere inward. "Time to earn our credits, pilots," Franz announced. "I'm selecting an attack pattern to maximize our velocity and minimize our pass time. You'll be released to individual control once your fighters are launched in the pattern. Let me repeat. Allow your controller to guide you once you're released." The Nual bullet ship maintained a relatively slow velocity on its approach. It was the more powerful vessel, with a stronger beam than an individual traveler. The lesser velocity would extend the engagement time and allow the bullet ship to make use of its heavier weaponry. It would have the opportunity to eliminate 4 or 5 of the Omnian fighters with a single blast of its beam. But Z's pattern hadn't sent the travelers straight at the bullet ship. Being a Sade and a collector of mathematical oddities, Z had borrowed Cordelia's patterning of Dagger Libran X missiles from the early days. His program sent the fighters in an evolving spiral pattern. Initially, the fighters flared out, the ship's agility aiding the maneuver. Then they were brought spiraling together onto the target. The bullet ship shifted its vector and managed to fire once before the travelers shot past. 2 fighters were struck, and both were demolished. The other 14 fighters scored beam strikes on the bullet ship, completely disabling its aft-mounted engines. "Franz, the bullet ship is without drive power," Miranda sent. "Order your group to stay away from the bow in case the beam weaponry is still active. Otherwise, you can ignore it. And I'm sorry for the loss of your 2 pilots." Franz had watched the icons of 2 of his fighters shift from green to red in his heads-up display. They were both Omnian pilots from the Judgment, Lucia Bellardo's trident. Miranda's comment told him there would be no opportunity to recover the pilots. "Group Leader Cohen, reform your wall," Reiko ordered. "We have the sphere turning inward. Your new assignment is to act as a blocking force. Maintain your spread. Do not attack unless ordered." "Trident captains, we're decelerating," Reiko sent. "Sades, I want to keep the tridents spread and ready to shift locations relative to the sphere's movement. You have control in that regard." Julian Z and Miranda calculated the new trajectories that were required to augment Reiko's directive and signaled the warship's controllers. Tripping sat in his command chair and stewed. Decelerating the squadron at this time wouldn't have been his call. Attack would have been. He eyed the holovid display, which indicated that the squadron would reach 0 velocity within 2 to 3 hours. "Alex, the sphere is decelerating. I project it will soon come to a halt," Julian said quietly. "Worst-case scenario, Admiral. It's decision time," Reiko sent to Tatia. Alex's mind was in turmoil. A single thought kept circling through his mind. "No sacrifice is too great." For all intents and purposes, the sphere was at their mercy, but those who thought that way about their adversaries were deluding themselves. An enemy always had a final resort. "Admiral Tripping, your ships are out of position," Ellie sent over the fleet comm channel. "Admiral Tripping," Reiko called. "Commodore, the flagship's signals are not being received by the new Terran Trident controllers," Z explained. "The Admiral has activated his device," Tatia added heatedly. The flagship's bridge personnel listened to Ellie attempting to get Admiral Tripping's attention. She utilized her fleet channel so that the senior commanders could hear any communication she received from Tripping, but he was silent. Captains Jigelski and Philister were isolated from fleet command. They thought Admiral Tripping was relaying Commodore Shimada's directives. It was their assumption that the Admiral had been authorized to take independent control of their warships. Only Captain Jonathan Morney knew the truth. He looked at his sleep-deprived Admiral, who was staring at the holovid, the small controller device in his hand.
"New Terran tridents, attack!" Tripping ordered his captains after cutting their controllers free and silencing the Liberator's comm channel.
However, Tripping didn't expect an Omnian captain, one assigned to the upper ecliptic with his forces, to attempt communication with him. It was a scenario he hadn't considered, and it infuriated him the more insistent she became.
"Is Captain Thompson speaking to my ships?" Tripping asked, his teeth grinding.
Morney glanced at his comm officer, who pointed to a signal icon on his board. "Captain Thompson is on the fleet channel, Admiral. All ships can hear her," Morney replied.
"Shut her down, Captain," Tripping ordered in a brittle voice. "I don't want her talking to my ships."
Morney glanced again at his comm officer, whose pained expression confirmed there was no way to accommodate the Admiral's request. Morney made a slashing motion across his throat with his hand and pointed to the Admiral. The comm officer nodded and ended Ellie's voice in mid-sentence.
"Ah, that's better," Tripping said into the quiet.
Ellie saw her link to the Jeffrey Orland drop off. Oddly enough, the other two NT warships were still connected to her.
"Captain Jigelski, what has Tripping ordered you to do?" Ellie said over her bridge comm.
When she didn't receive a reply, she tried again.
"Alphonse, talk to me. What's happening?"
"We have independent control of our tridents, Captain, and we're under orders from Admiral Tripping to attack the sphere," Alphonse reluctantly replied.
"Alphonse, if you break our blockade, you'll offer the sphere an escape route, and the Admiral can't be sure that the sphere has no defenses. Your three ships might not have enough firepower."
"I have no contradictory orders, Captain," Alphonse replied.
"Captain Jigelski," Alphonse heard, "this is Commodore Shimada. I'm relaying my signal through Captain Thompson's ship. You're ordered to cease your approach to the sphere and return to formation."
Ellie winced at the hard tone Reiko had taken. She felt she had been reaching Alphonse, but his reply indicated that Reiko had turned him away.
"Commodore, this is something that Admiral Tripping and your superior should resolve. It's not right, nor fair, to place the captains in the middle of an authority fight between commanders."
"Captain Jigelski," Reiko said, but her words didn't travel beyond the Redemption's controller.
"Commodore, Captain Jigelski cut the link, and he's not answering my comms," Ellie sent.
"And I thought the sphere coming to a stationary position was a worst-case scenario," Reiko complained privately to Tatia. Alex found himself the focus of attention on the Liberator's bridge. The ugly what-if question Tatia had asked was suddenly a real situation. Tripping had taken command of his warships. Now the question was whether the Omnians stood back and watched, or whether they would commit to supporting the new Terrans, regardless of the misguided judgment of their commander.
"Alex, we need a decision," Tatia said. "Do we follow the new Terrans or not?"
"There are hundreds of good people aboard those ships, Admiral, led by one idiot," Alex growled out.
"The sphere's accelerating," Julian announced. "It's heading toward the new Terran ships."
Reiko froze. She was ticks away from ordering Ellie to reform the square with Tripping's tridents. Instead, she asked quietly,
"Why is it headed for our ships?"
"Sacrifice," Alex thought, and the word echoed through his mind.
"Abort the attack, Commodore. Maximum distance from the sphere," Alex ordered, his thought thundering through Reiko's mind. Reiko relayed the message with an urgency she had rarely felt. Whether it was the power of Alex's sending that rocked her mind or the intense fear that accompanied his thought, she couldn't tell. The SAIDs signaled the controllers of the 5 Omnian ships and the fighters. Courses were reversed and power applied at maximum to put as much distance between them and the sphere as they could. On everyone's mind was the question, what had happened? It was hoped there would be time later to learn the answer. "SAIDs, link me to the new Terran ships," Alex sent. Julian Z. Nor Miranda questioned Alex's request or sought to remind him of Admiral Tripping's cutout device. They divided the ships, Z taking the Admiral's flagship and attempting to find a way around his own creation. Julian and Miranda managed to connect to Jigalski and Philister's tridents and linked Alex. "We've temporarily usurped comm control, Alex, for these two ships, but they could shut us down manually at any time," Julian sent. "Send your message, Alex. It will be heard on their bridge speakers." "Aboard the Tridents, Arthur McMorris and Lem Ulam. This is Alex Racine. Listen carefully. Your lives depend on what I'm about to say. As sure as I breathe, I'm convinced the Nual aboard that sphere have decided that they will no longer attempt to evade our forces, nor will they surrender. That sphere is headed toward you for one reason and one reason only. The Nual are determined to have their enemy join them in death. Veer off now and apply maximum acceleration."
"Z," Alex sent.
"Not yet," Z replied. Jigelski's bridge crew eyed him. They'd heard Alex's message, and their faces reflected their anxiety.
"Comms, get me the Lem Ulam," Alphonse ordered.
"Captain Philister here," Bart replied.
"You heard?" Alphonse asked.
"Loud and clear," Bart replied. "I'm not fluent in the law in these cases. Is Admiral Tripping in charge of our ships or not?"
"Our oaths were to the new Terran Constitution," Alphonse replied. "But Admiral Tripping signed an agreement with Omnia ships to operate under Admiral Tachenko's orders. And her boss is the majority shareholder of Omnia ships, who just told us to abort the attack."
"Putting aside the question of legality," Bart replied, "I'm thinking about Alex Racine's warning. You know the rumors about him, right?"
"Which one of the few hundred are you talking about?" Alphonse joked, which seemed out of place under the circumstances.
"Okay, forget that. What if he's right?"
"Then we're sailing two ships, hundreds of crew, and our sorry butts to join the galaxy's collection of space dust."
"I'm serious, Alphonse," Bart replied, throwing aside formality.
"I know, Bart. That's why I called you. I think it's high time to think of our people. We've been warned by the man who has been right about aliens more times than I can count, and our admiral is disobeying the rightful orders of his senior officer. I'm for abandoning this foolhardy attack as ordered by Alex Racine."
"Agreed. I'm reversing course," Bart replied.
"Make for a rendezvous with Captain Thompson," Alphonse said.
"Alex, Captains Jigalski and Philister are reversing course. Vectors will intersect the Redemption," Julian announced.
"Two ships saved," Tatia said in a soft exhale of breath.
"Z," Alex sent.
"With regrets, Alex, I would be the first to tell you if I were successful," Z sent with more than a little exasperation.
If asked, Z would have declared that it was a SAID's duty to create programs with a superior form. Privately, he was proud of his creations, but in this case he was disgusted with himself. He felt if he'd operated more like a human, he would have left a back door for unseen events like this. Instead, he'd ensured the program was sealed against intrusion by humans or SAIDs.
"Captain, our sister ships are retreating," the Jeffrey Orlan's navigator reported to Morney.
"What?" the admiral yelled, jumping up from his command chair.
He stumbled, his legs weak from spending too much time sitting, despite the efforts of the chair's nanites to relieve the pressure in his lower body.
Morney had extended a hand to help him, but Tripping angrily shook it off after catching his balance. Tripping glanced at the navigator's board and looked over his shoulder at the holovid.
"Cowards," he muttered under his breath.
Then he gathered himself, squared his shoulders, and announced in a loud voice,
"Then the glory will be ours when we destroy this sphere, and two captains will face a board of inquiry when we return to New Terra."
Rounding on Morney, Tripping said, "Are our beams ready to fire?"
"Yes, Admiral," Morney replied. "Safeties were released after the ship entered the system's space."
"Captain, I hope you will give me the honor of ordering the first beam salvo," Tripping requested.
"Of course, sir," Morney replied.
He had hooked his career to Tripping, despite the admonitions of the other two captains. They had repeatedly warned him about the Admiral's dangerous habit of grandstanding, but it was his thought that the squadron would be doing nothing more than playing war games.
"How wrong you were," Morney thought.
"Weapons targeting," Tripping called out, standing with his hands locked behind his back.
He'd seen some ancient vids of heroic captains of space and sea standing on their ship's bridges in that pose, and had always admired it.
"Locked on the sphere, Admiral," the weapons officer replied.
"Time to firing?" Tripping asked.
4.6 minutes, sir."
"Excellent. Stand by," Tripping ordered.
The time counted down. The bridge crew were breathing shallowly. Fear made their movements small and slow, and sweat formed on brows. A part of Morney's brain was screaming at him to confine the Admiral to quarters and retreat his trident as fast as he could.
"Inside our weapons' effective range, sir," the weapons officer said. There was a hint of sadness in her voice.
"Fire!" Admiral Tripping ordered, personal affirmation strong in his voice.
That was the Admiral's final word. The weapons officer tapped her board to release the tremendous amount of energy held in the ship's power crystals, at the same time the sphere detonated. Hundreds of millions of metric tons of hot metal and gas from the enemy ship expanded in every direction. The Jeffrey Orland's beams managed to eliminate a few thousand tons of the dangerous mixture. But behind those vaporized quantities came a massive amount of metal debris that sliced the trident into pieces. The warship's power crystals were destroyed, and they released their energy. In the first moment, Tripping's ship was torn apart. Then in the next tick, it too was an expanding ball of metal, hot gases, and organic matter.
"The sphere and the Jeffrey Orlan are gone," Julian reported.
"The trident fired its beams," Miranda added. Alex snapped his head around to lock eyes with Miranda.
"Checking, Alex," Miranda said, interpreting the reason for Alex's anxiousness.
"Negative, Alex," Miranda replied.
"Telemetry data shows that the sphere's detonation and the trident's firing of its beams were simultaneous."
"The Nual committed suicide," Svetlana said, turning to stare at Alex.
"It was a sacrifice, not suicide," Alex said quietly.
"The Nual were intent on taking some of their enemy with them.
That's who we face," he added in a stronger voice, and gazed around at the bridge personnel, one at a time, to drive home his point.
"I think the two of you need a new name for Alex," Renee sent to the twins as she left the rear bulkhead to join Alex.
"Madman doesn't seem appropriate anymore."
Etienne and Delain glanced at each other in surprise. As far as they knew, Madman was their private name for Alex. That Serre knew their secret was a complete surprise to them.
Chapter 24 New Terra. Moments after the sphere detonated, taking the NT Jeffrey Orlan with it, the fleet recorded a second significant detonation. The bullet ship had self-destructed. A search was conducted at the sites where the warship and the two fighters were lost.
All three ships were utterly destroyed. There was nothing left to recover. The fleet rejoined, but there was a small problem. They'd lost a trident, which had accommodated four fighters. Lucia's judgment, having lost two ships, picked up two of the NT travelers. Z determined there would be room to squeeze a third fighter in each bay of a trident if all ancillary material were removed. Svetlana ordered her crew chiefs to strip the Liberator's bays. Afterward, the two remaining traveler controllers received virtual maps of the flagship's bays and slowly eased the ships aboard to tuck next to the other two fighters. "Well done, Z," Svetlana complimented the Sade when the bay doors closed. "We actually have centimeters to spare." The fleet began the long transit home. By the time they would make Omnia, they would have been gone for 10 long months. Alex spoke with Reiko after the conflict. He'd noticed she was withdrawn. It wasn't the reaction he would have expected from her after a successful prosecution of her strategy. "I lost a ship full of good people," Reiko had replied, when Alex heard what was bothering her. "And eliminated a sphere," Alex had replied. "And here's another way of looking at it, Reiko. Now that we know how the Nual act when they're cornered, who's to say that if it wasn't for Admiral Tripping's foolhardy charge, that more of our ships wouldn't have been lured closer? We might have lost most or all of the squadron." The first evening after the encounter with the sphere, meals aboard every ship were subdued, more so aboard the new Terran tridents. While many were relieved to be alive, survivor's guilt was running rampant, and arguments or recrimination occasionally broke out. "Admiral, I'll be traveling to New Terra with Captains Jigelski and Philister. I can imagine the assorted receptions those two will receive when the full story gets out," Alex said as he sipped on his cup of tea. "They did what was ordered of them," Reiko said tersely. "I don't disagree with you, Commodore, but that's our viewpoint, and Alphonse and Bart aren't Omnians," Alex replied. "Alex, what ship do you want to take to New Terra?" Tadia asked, working on the last of her meal. Despite the unsettled emotions of the evening, she fell back on her old TSF habits. In this case, it was to eat when you got the opportunity, as you never knew when the next meal would come your way. "I want to give the fleet a break. The Reaver will have returned by now," Alex replied. "You can't have my half," Renee said quietly but with determination. She was seated across from Alex, and the two stared evenly at each other. The silence extended, and the table of individuals began glancing at one another. "Well, I can't take half a ship, can I?" Alex finally said. "What do you suggest, Sare?" "I suggest from now on that you, Sare, ride in the most powerful ship you can find. And I don't care if they only have room on the deck to provide you a place to sleep. Your life has great meaning to me, but it has greater importance to the future of humankind. And you will be protected, whether you like it or not." At Renee's conclusion, those at the table grabbed empty cups and pounded them or clapped and whistled, raising a huge ruckus that drew the attention of everyone in the meal room. "I bow to my lady's wishes," Alex said gallantly and pursed his lips at Renee. "You promise?" Renee asked. She was overwhelmed by the power of Alex's emotions that flooded through her mind via her implant. Renee's eyes closed, her head tilted back, and a warm smile formed on her face. "He promises," she whispered. "Alex, you wouldn't be available to teach my partner how to do that, would you?" Tatia asked, which drew chuckles from the table. "I noticed you clapping earlier, Captain, at the loss of my passenger liner," Alex said to Svetlana. "However, you and your crew will have to forego your vacation time. I'll be taking the Liberator to New Terra." "Well, at least I get my ship back," Svetlana quipped, eyeing Reiko. "Not quite, Captain," Tatia replied with a grin.
I'll be going with Alex.
The table burst out in laughter at Svetlana's crestfallen expression. The head table's emotional release slowly spread throughout the room, and appetites regained a little of their former strength. When the fleet transited into Omnia's space, four of the O.S. Tridents headed inward. The new Terran warships in the company of the O.S. Liberator made their final transit to Oestus, the new Terran star. Alex took the opportunity to talk again with Alphonse and Bart. He understood survivor's guilt, but the two men couldn't shake their feelings that they had committed a serious breach of naval protocol by refusing to follow their admiral's order. Seated at his cabin's undersized desk, Alex linked to the Liberator's controller and established private connections with the two captains, who sat at their cabin tables with their comm consoles.
"Captains," Alex sent, "I would like you to reconsider your decision to present yourself for review before I have an opportunity to speak to New Terra's leaders and senior naval officers. Once the public learns of the loss of the Jeffrey Orlan, there will be a huge outcry from the families, which might sway the Board of Inquiry's opinion.
Alex, we appreciate your support, but this is something that Alphonse and I feel we need to do," Bart said.
"I echo Bart's sentiments, Alex. You've been incredibly generous in your support, and while you're convinced of our innocence, we aren't," Alphonse added.
"While I can't accept your choice to assume this guilt, I understand where it comes from," Alex sent. "Losing friends, especially shipmates, is a terrible burden. But know this, I don't intend to let this rest. Good night, Sayers."
"What do you think he meant about not letting it rest?" Bart asked after Alex closed his link.
"You want me to tell you what Alex Racine is thinking at any one moment?" Alphonse asked. "I don't think anyone but Julian would know the answer to that question."
When the three Tridents transited into Oestus space, the populace buzzed with the news, spread quickly by the media. Two of the NT ships had been gone for more than a year, and the flagship for much of that time. It was only after an enterprising reporter pinged each ship and received IDs of one OS and two NT warships that the public's mood shifted. Questions were posed by media personalities about the absence of the Admiral and his flagship, ranging from simple ones about where the ship might be to dark ones that supposed dire things had happened to them.
"Word's out, Alex, about the ship IDs," Maria Gonzalez said without preliminaries when she connected to Alex.
Alex was crammed behind his cabin desk, wearing a short robe which was absorbing the last of the refresher's moisture. His console was set to voice comm while Renee worked at drying his hair.
Alex replied, his voice muffled by the towel.
"Am I interrupting something, Alex?" Maria asked.
"Nothing I can't finish later," Renee replied.
"Youth, it must be nice," Maria said.
"I need to ask you, Alex, where's Tripping's flagship?"
"Spreading out in little pieces across a cold system many, many light years from here, Maria, I'm sad to say," Alex replied.
"Please tell me that the Admiral was a hero and he died with his crew defending humankind," Maria said hopefully.
Alex leaned back in his chair, wrapping the towel around his neck, and Renee perched on the desktop. While Alex was trying to think of a way to answer Maria's question, Renee said,
"He can't, Maria."
"I knew it," Maria replied hotly.
"What happened?"
"That story will take time to tell, Maria. I'm more concerned about the guilt-ridden survivors, namely Captains Jagelski and Philister," Alex said.
"Survivor's guilt is a heavy burden," Maria replied.
"No one knows that better than you, Alex."
"Well, in this case, Maria, it's complicated by the circumstances of Tripping's demise," Alex replied. "He cut off comms with our flagship and ordered an attack, contrary to the battle commander's orders. I convinced Captains Jagelski and Philister to abandon the attack. Now they feel that they might have been dishonorable."
How did the flagship meet its end? Maria asked.
The sphere self-destructed, Alex replied.
Incredible, Maria said. But surely that couldn't have been foreseen by anyone.
Sorry to disabuse you of that notion, Maria, Renee replied. But I'll allow you one guess.
What, Alex, did the sphere slip you a note saying we don't surrender under any circumstances?
Something like that, Alex replied, uncomfortable with the turn in the conversation.
Renee slipped off the desk to stand behind him, and she stroked her fingers through Alex's short, thick, still moist hair.
The way I see it, Maria, Alex said, Tripping broke his agreement with us, issued an illegal order, managed to destroy his ship unnecessarily, and attempted to take the other two tridents with him. Now his remaining captains think they should tell all and throw themselves on the mercy of the Navy's Board of Inquiry.
And you don't agree with their intentions? Maria asked.
Muscle flexion on the jaw is about 60%, Maria, Renee said.
I take that as an intense disagreement with the captains, Maria replied.
Well, then I don't need to ask why your flagship is here, do I, Alex?
Speaking of traveling accommodations, why a warship?
Because I won't let him travel in a passenger liner anymore, Maria, Renee said forcefully.
It's Alex that's putting together the scope of what we face. Our adversaries don't consist of a couple of spheres. The Nual appear to be an old and advanced civilization that is intent on expansion. From now on, Alex travels aboard the most powerful ship we have, wherever he goes.
Maria had rarely heard metal ringing in Renee's voice. She couldn't imagine what had transpired in the past year, but if Renee was thinking like this, it couldn't be good.
What do you hope to accomplish here, Alex?
This was the question Maria was afraid to ask, but knew she must.
Maria, these two captains are fine, honorable men who believe they're unworthy of their positions because of some improper New Terran naval officer training. Unlawful orders from superiors must not only be rejected, training should reinforce regulations that allow subordinate officers to remove from command senior officers who issue those types of orders.
Maria had her answer without Alex responding directly to her question.
This was a matter of justice for him. Without a fair resolution, as Alex perceived it, the agreement to share technology and construct warships for defense and offense would be placed in jeopardy. Adding to this was the specter of a massive alien empire somewhere out in the deep dark. All this spelled incredible complications for New Terra's fledgling, space-capable society.
"Will you see me when you make orbit, Alex?" Maria asked, hoping to have a face-to-face meeting with Alex to moderate his approach to New Terra's leaders.
"Certainly, Maria, if you're standing next to Harold Grumley at the time. He'll be my first stop," Alex replied.
"Good night, Alex, Renee," Maria replied, closing the comlink.
The three tridents made orbit over New Terra. The two NT pilots offloaded their travelers from the flagship and made for the planet's fighter training base. Skeleton crews rendezvoused with the two NT warships to relieve the entire ship's complements, who had been missing their families and friends. Alex winced as Julian reported to him the mass exodus of NT personnel aboard the warship's travelers.
"There goes control over the story," Alex sent to Julian.
"I can imagine the number of versions that will be spread, Alex, with humans penchant to elaborate and omit details.
That number would equal the total number of crew, except for two captains who will be painfully honest," Alex replied.
"It's being reported that the Board of Inquiry is set to convene in 2 days. The Trident's controllers are being accessed as we speak."
"They aren't wasting any time," Alex sent.
"The public is demanding to know what happened to their loved ones, and important personages are angry at the loss of their favored one, Admiral Anthony Tripping."
"Meet you in the bay, Julian," Alex replied.
He lifted Renee up, kissed her soundly, and announced,
I go to do battle with the power denizens of New Terra.
Don't forget your lance, Sir Racine, Renee replied. They were bantering about one of her favorite vids, a strange tale of men on horses dressed in metal and engaged in heroic deeds. Franz readied a traveler for his passengers, Alex, Julian, Tatia, and the twins.
"Returning to New Terra feels stranger every time we arrive," Tatia commented to Alex, who sat across from her. "Seeing my parents becomes a little more surreal. I love them, but I know them less and less."
"I wonder what I'll feel when I see my parents and sister again," Alex replied.
"Cordelia and I have wondered the same thing about our youngest children," Julian added. "Humans have this habit of evolving in unforeseen directions in incredibly short periods of time."
The three sat quietly after that exchange. Franz dropped through the atmosphere and chose to land the traveler on the front grounds of Government House, the president's residence.
"This ought to be interesting," Tatia said with a smirk as she eyed the twins, who were wearing their shoulder-mounted stun guns and energy packs. It was a new standard that everyone around Alex insisted on, not that he approved, but he'd given up objecting to the small things. In his opinion, there were much more important things to worry about. Tatia had forewarned the president's security about the escorts who would accompany Alex, but they were unprepared for the formidable weapons staring at them. The senior security officer asked the group to halt while he examined the stun guns. Alain used the opportunity to have his left shoulder weapon track the man as he walked from the front of him to the side. It so unnerved the officer that he waved the group forward without another word.
"Behave," Tatia sent to Alain, her partner, who flashed a grin at her.
"Incorrigible," she responded. "You two used to be so modest and introverted."
"It's the Alex effect," Alain shot back.
Inside Government House, an aide greeted Alex and asked the group to wait while they were announced. Alex flashed back to his first visit to Government House with Renée de Guernon at his side. At the time, he was intrigued by her, but they weren't partners yet. Maria had arrived prior to the Omnians to brief the president, but Harold hadn't allowed her the opportunity before he launched into describing the situation as he saw it. Maria listened patiently to Harold as he droned on. She kept her eye on the chronometer, knowing Alex and company would be precisely on time. With a diminishing window to make her case, Maria interrupted the president.
"Harold, let me stress a few things to you before Alex arrives. He won't take into account your protestations of political pressure, and he certainly won't be concerned about how the captains are treated with regard to the effect it will have on your re-election chances. Alex Racine will be expecting just treatment for Captains Jigelski and Philister. In his opinion, they made the right call. They followed the lawful orders of the battle commander, Commodore Shimada, and rightfully ignored the unlawful orders of Admiral Tripping."
"But, Maria, Tripping has a great many supporters, and they view him as a hero. They believe he must have sacrificed his life and ship to eliminate a dangerous enemy."
"What sacrifice are you talking about, Harold? Didn't you read Alex and Tatia's reports? The sphere blew up in an attempt to take as many of the squadron's ships with it as it could. Tripping's single salvo of beam shots didn't do anything except destroy a few tons of space junk that were hurtling at his ship."
"That's not the way it's being portrayed in certain circles," Harold protested.
"Well, Harold, I can tell you that you're about to get an education in a different way of looking at things," Maria said, just as an aide tapped at the conference room door.
"Mr. President, your pardon, but your guests have landed," the aide said.
"Thank you. We have time yet," Harold said, glancing toward Maria.
"Mr. President, to be more precise, your guests are here. Their traveler landed on the front grounds," the aide clarified.
Harold blinked at his aide, processing the idea that his guests would fly directly to Government House. It certainly wasn't protocol, and perhaps even a little rude.
For her part, Maria was smiling and thinking, "Get ready, Harold, here come the Omnians." The aide who had greeted Alex hurried back to his guests, who were waiting in the rotunda next to the statue of Lem-Ulam, the last captain of the new Terran colony ship before it was abandoned. "This way, Mr. Racine," the aide said, indicating the direction with an arm and eyeing the shoulder-mounted weapons on the twins. "President Grumley and Envoy Gonzales are waiting for you in the main conference room." Knowing where to go, Alex's strides quickly outpaced that of the aide, who hurried to keep up with the group. Omnians, the aide thought with a certain amount of deprecation. He was used to much more decorum from visitors to the august residence. "President Grumley, thank you for seeing us on such short notice," Alex said, entering the conference room without waiting to be announced. "You're welcome, Alex," Harold said, rising and shaking Alex's hand. "Maria," Alex said warmly, embracing her. "Good to throw my arms around you again, youngster," Maria replied. Harold watched Maria's greeting of Alex and Tatia with interest. The strength of their relationships was evident. But what surprised him was the hug that Maria extended to Julian. It was as affectionate as those given to Alex and Tatia, and the Sade's expression indicated he appreciated it. As Harold's three guests took seats at the conference table, he glanced toward the twins, who took up positions, one in the room's far corner and the other near the door. "Extraordinary statement," Grumley said, regarding the weapons which had unnerved his security forces and required an override from him. "Yes," Tatia agreed, glancing at Alain, who stood by the doorway. When she had first seen them mounted on Alain, she had quipped, "I want a pair. Do you have them in extra large?" Turning to the president, Tatia said, "It's come to the attention of Omnians that this particular individual," motioning to Alex, "might be more important to us than we thought. But don't tell him that," which earned her a grin from Alex. "I always thought so," Maria added, smiling at Tatia. "Yes, well, to business, Alex," Harold said. "How can I help you?" Alex eyed the president. It wasn't the opening he had hoped for. The president seemed determined to be coy. "Julian," Alex said. The Sade placed a small holovid on the table and spooled off an enormous file he had compiled. It contained the events at System FYM-552, where the sphere was destroyed. As opposed to their summary reports, Harold and Maria heard and witnessed the action and communication in a series of integrated clips. The presentation was long but riveting, including right up to the last moment, when Alex urged the two new Terran captains to abandon the attack. When Julian shut down the holovid, Maria eyed her ex-TSF major. Tatia knew what was on Maria's mind, and she tipped her head toward Alex to indicate that he had indeed perceived the sphere's action before it happened. "Extraordinary and most convincing," Harold said, sitting back in the chair to consider his options. The presentation in and of itself, if released to the public, would damn Tripping in the court of public opinion. Worse, it would create an outcry that could blow back on the government for promoting an obviously unqualified man to command New Terra's tridents. It struck Harold that Maria's advice was right on the mark. "What would satisfy you, Alex?" Harold asked, sitting forward and clasping his hands together on the table. Maria recognized Harold's gesture as the one he exhibited when he sought to mollify a complainant, and she breathed a quiet sigh of relief. "You mean besides preferring to prosecute a dead man for incompetence, failing to follow orders, endangering his squadron, and killing everyone aboard his ship?" Alex replied sternly, enumerating the points on his fingertips. Harold gulped back his incredulity. He'd hoped he'd concealed his reaction from his guests, but a scan of their faces revealed he hadn't. This wasn't the dialogue's opening he had expected.
The one thing that restored his emotional balance was the twinkle he caught in Maria's eyes. She immensely enjoyed Alex's opening salvo.
"You can probably do little for me," Alex continued. "The public has undoubtedly formed their opinions, and unfortunately I don't foresee the captains adequately defending themselves. The Board of Inquiry is moving quickly, too quickly in my opinion, and I intend to be present at the inquiry to ensure the captains' stories are effectively presented."
"Alex, you do realize that you'll be relegated to the position of spectator?" Harold asked. He expected protestations, but Alex stared calmly at him, the hint of a lopsided smile on his face. Harold glanced at the Admiral, looking for support, but she regarded him evenly, as if there were nothing more to be said. The discussion had been so disconcerting that it crossed Harold's mind to wonder if he had been negotiating with humans.
"In the future, President Crumley," Alex said, leaning his forearms on the table, "the new Terran commanders who sail with us must be vetted by our senior officers and will be promoted from your captains. No more jumped-up admirals."
"Alex, that's something I don't have control over," Harold protested.
"Then you can tell those who do handle the appointments that New Terra risks abrogating our agreement by refusing to abide by this demand," Alex replied as he stood. In one movement, the Omnians swept from the room. Alain first, Alex next, followed by Tatia and Julian, and Etienne last.
"They move like an integrated machine," Harold said, staring open-mouthed at the door.
"And I didn't call for an aide to escort them out," he muttered.
To Harold's discomfort, Maria was laughing.
"Might I remind you, Maria, you're laughing at your president," Harold said, a little miffed.
"Then fire me, Harold, if you can't take it," Maria shot back, assuming a stern visage. "I tried to tell you, and all you could do is explain your political situation, as if I've never held the presidency. What I've done that you've never done is work with Alex and the Meridians, then the Herrikans, and now the Omnians. I understand them, but I seem to have to continually teach the individuals who hold this office about their natures."
"Alex Racine wouldn't break the accord. He needs us too much," Harold said defiantly, trying to regain ground with Maria.
"Don't you believe it," Maria replied hotly. "Alex would drop us in a heartbeat if we refused his requests. What you've failed to understand, Harold, is that Tripping's actions not only jeopardized our ships. He risked the lives of everyone in that squadron, and Alex won't stand for that. And one more thing, the Confederation is now on board with Alex. In a tremendous societal course change for them, they're building warships, and they can launch 100 for every one of ours. Alex doesn't need us. We need him."
2 days after making New Terra's orbit, Captains Jigelski and Philister sat together at a small table facing 5 naval officers who represented the Board of Inquiry.
"Before we begin, the Board must deal with a most unusual request," Commodore Don Jacobson, the Board's presiding officer, said. "Mr. Alex Racine, please approach."
Alex chose to stand beside the captains rather than take the position the Commodore had indicated.
"Mr. Racine, the Board has received your request that you be allowed to be a witness for the captains," Jacobson announced.
"This is a Board of Inquiry. We're convened to hear the captain's personal descriptions of the events surrounding the loss of the N.T. Jeffrey Orlan, and ask them questions regarding their testimonies. This isn't a trial requiring witnesses. If we think that the captains have committed acts contrary to New Terra's naval code of conduct, we'll recommend that they're held over for trial, at which time your witness statements may be admitted."
"I understand your procedures, Commodore Jacobson," Alex replied.
"I'm present to ensure that the captains accurately relate the events that occurred at FYM 552.
"Do you believe that Captains Jigelski and Philister won't be truthful regarding their statements to this board, Mr. Racine?"
"Commodore, I believe they will relay the facts accurately. I'm here to ensure the board has the proper perspective surrounding those facts."
"Well, Mr. Racine, I regret to inform you that the only individual who may address the board under those circumstances